It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Orioles and Guardians going at it again tonight. Orioles in first place, tied with the Yankees right now in the American League East. Tampa Bay, not out of that. They're 9 games back. And that's the team that BA covers like absolute crazy. And he joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hi, Brian.
Well, hello, gentlemen. How are we doing?
We couldn't be finer. Awesome. Thank you very much.
We had one of your former teammates on an hour ago, Jason Stanford.
Oh, very good. What is he up to now?
Baseball clinics here. He was a high school baseball coach for a little bit, wasn't he?
He's working up here doing baseball stuff and also putting together a great charitable thing coming up at the ballpark.
First responders and veterans, so he is definitely giving back to the community.
Nice.
Yeah, B.A., what have you done? What have you done for the community lately?
Oh, my God.
So you know what? It's 6:15 and 6:30. I come on the boob tube and I try to entertain. That's about all I've done. That's more than enough, BA.
Oh, wait a second. I have the Geneva on the Lake Chamber of Commerce, or just Geneva Chamber of Commerce. They want to talk to you after the show, so we're good.
Do they have one?
I don't know if they don't. They do now.
Yeah, they're based in the Brian Anderson building. So that was very nice of you to donate to the community.
I would have loved to have been at the groundbreaking for that. Yeah, I've known anything about it.
No, the real phone calls will be as soon as we hang up with you, and it'll be everybody from Geneva like, I knew Brian in high school, and his car was awesome, man. He had the best car in high school.
I did not have the best car in high school. I had a 1978 Grand Le Mans. That was a shade of brown that usually you find circling.
Stop. We know.
I'll bet it ran great, though, right?
It did. It had a great engine in it, no doubt. You knew it was coming, but it was, it was nothing great. And by the way, my parents, ironically enough, or I shouldn't say ironically enough, but it was interesting because when they ended up getting me that car, they told me it came down between this and an orange Camaro. If you're going to choose the 78 Grand Le Mans, that shade of brown, just leave the orange Camaro out of it. Don't let me know that was an option. That's terrible.
That's when you get the lecture. You're like, you know, when you have a fast car like a Camaro, you're going to tend to get more speeding tickets. So we took the more conservative car.
Nice.
That's exactly what the argument was. I could have done without it. I could have just had the Grand Le Mans and lived with it. You didn't have to tease me with the Camaro.
That's beautiful. Your Tampa Bay Rays are 9 games out in the East, yet were extremely active at the trade deadline and considered by all of the pundits to have done a really nice job, BA, but traded away a lot of guys. How does that play with a fan base? How does that play with a team? Because yet they move pieces, yet are still 9 games out, and people think they did a great job at the trade deadline. That's an interesting balance there.
It is. And really, it's, I think from afar, it's hard to look at it as a balance when you look at who they traded away. So let's go back, a month or a few weeks, whatever it was, the way that these seasons go, things run together. But they ended up trading Aaron Civale. Obviously, people in Cleveland are familiar with him. Traded him away because they had Shane Boz coming in. One of their young guys they want to learn about, has a chance to be really a really special pitcher if everything breaks right. So you had that. Then you had Phil Maton, who they spent a lot of money on to help out the bullpen. They traded him away, but they have a couple of young kids that they thought could do the job as well or maybe even better, and so they plugged them in. Then you get to our trip to New York and Toronto, and we land back in St. Pete from Toronto and learn as soon as we get feet on the tarmac that Randy Arozarena, the lifeblood of your team, a fan favorite, a guy that has been so consistent in his performance, loves the big stage, performs in the big moments against the big teams. He's traded to Seattle, and you're like, oh, wow. Because if Randy is capable of being traded, then I think everybody's looking over their shoulder. And sure enough, before the end of the weekend, Randy's gone. Zach Eflin, opening day starter, gone. Jason Adam, your best, most consistent reliever, gone. I did the Roku game on Sunday. It was an 11:30 start. So we're showing up early to go over stuff before the game, and we're hearing that there's a rumbling that someone prominent could be traded. That was Jason Adam to the Padres. Okay, wow, that's three guys now in the last 48 hours. By the time I'm driving home, your all-star representative, Isak Paredes, gone to the Cubs. I mean, it just didn't end. And then they ended up trading Sean Armstrong to the Cardinals, one of their prominent relievers the last few years. So, that it had all the earmarks of a fire sale, a complete fire sale, and yet they feel that there are enough pieces there to hang around that wild card race. And so far, they've been right. Now, I know it hasn't been that long, but I think when they're in that 3 to 4 games out of the wild card, there's a couple of teams that they're going to have to jump to get there, but they feel fully capable of being able to do that. But at the same time, the people that Randy Arozarena, he was your guy. Your opening day star representative, all gone over the weekend. It was absolutely incredible. And even by Rays standards, it was shocking because we know that they do this. They're going to get value for a guy that they're not going to be able to pay. And so rather than hold on to him too long and get nothing for him, they're going to flip that and restock the farm system. And that's what they did, but they did it en masse. And the ironic thing is the Rays already had what most people considered, certainly all the pundits, one of the top farm systems in Major League Baseball. They had 9 different young ball players that they brought in those series of trades, 9 that moved into their top 30. So you already have a really good farm system, and you have 9 guys that have displaced 9 guys out of your top 30. So now they are the number one farm system in baseball, and it's not really close. And so they were able to stagger those players so that they can start to contribute and come up through the year. So it does bode very well for the future, but I'll be real interested to see how it does, right now. They got Jeffrey Springs back last Tuesday. They've got Drew Rasmussen coming back very soon. They'll have Shane McClanahan probably at the beginning of next year. So you have the makings of one heck of a potent starting rotation, and you're going to have to fill that, surround that with some talent to be able to continue to compete. But that's what they feel like they're going to be able to do, even though they got rid of some really, really prominent players on this year's team.
So, B.A., I mean, I'm kind of looking at that from the perspective of here and there. So, like, the Guardians made 2 deals with teams that were in the National League, and you're talking about Randy Arozarena. I mean, he's going to the Mariners, and you're chasing the Mariners. You talked about
right.
Tampa Bay. So, I mean, that's got to be it's got to be awkward to want to try to help out a team that's ahead of you, knowing that you're only a game behind them. And then if you really feel like you think you can make the playoffs and get a wild card spot, that's got to be a tough deal to make, isn't it?
It is, but they are so dug in on, we don't care who we're trading with. We're going to take the best deal. We're going to get the best return that we can. Don't care who it's with. Yeah, they traded.
Do you think most teams think that way? Because we the Guardians, like the fans here, were all in on making deals with the White Sox and the Tigers. While the Tigers might have made a deal, the White Sox were not about to do that.
Yeah, well, and that's why the White Sox are who they are. They ought to be relegated to AAA. So who cares? Who cares what they do? Their decision making has been awful for years. So just disregard that squad. I think that the Rays are going to make – listen, they traded their opening day starter to Baltimore. I mean,
They're trying to catch Baltimore.
Yeah.
That's right. And they're going to take the best deal and not care who the trade is with. And so the White Sox can play that game, and they can also win 40 games a year. Good for you.
The Guardians picked up a gentleman who you have some familiarity with, the former Tampa Bay Ray, Alex Cobb. What'd you think, and what's he have left?
You know what? I'm not sure what Alex has left. Whatever he does, you're going to get it. But I will tell you this much. I love him. Loved him as a Ray. He is a throwback. He is a throwback, anything for the team, pitches with his heart on his sleeve. I love that. I love that move, and I know he's coming off injury, and he's had some injury issues, and he's pitched for an awful long time. But when I saw that move, I was excited. That was one of those points that I wanted to get to, regardless of what we were going to talk about today. I wanted to throw my 2 cents in there on Alex Cobb. You're getting a gem. Love him. Love the kid. Love the kid. He is a gamer. Big time gamer.
All right, every time we think the Guardians might be going away, they don't. And now all of a sudden they sit here with the best record in baseball. You've been on teams like this where sometimes people didn't expect the unexpected. I think that's what we've learned over the last couple of weeks. Yes, they're in a really, really difficult part of the schedule right now. But when they play good teams, they play really I don't know why, but they're really good against good teams. And sometimes when they play against some like the White Sox, like they might lose a game here or there against those guys. I don't know. I'm at the point now where I'm just like, okay, if this team can just get to October, let the chips fall. You've been in clubhouses like that before. How is this happening? And I hate to ask the same question over and over again, but I am optimistic. I'm excited. I love the way they're playing right now. It's been a great summer of fun. I just hate the fact that it's so long and you're just trying to hang on sometimes.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're trying to hang on.
I am as a fan. I am. Yeah, I'm worried because I look at the schedule and I'm like, they play every good team.
Andy, no, you're worried because you're from Cleveland.
Oh, okay, good. That makes me feel
good. You're worried because you're from Cleveland. That's it. Yeah, too many things have gone wrong to not have that seep into your psyche. And trust me, I lived it. I lived it and was part of it. I mean, I was the fan that was pessimistic, and then I became 97. I was on the team that did it to the city. So I've experienced it from all angles. It's because you're from Cleveland. This team reminds me of the 2008 Rays because they got off to a great start in that tough division. Obviously, the American League East, probably the best division in baseball over the years. And, you know, everybody's waiting for them to fall back to the pack. When do the Rays become the Rays? And they didn't. And they went all the way to the World Series. They just kept proving everybody wrong. And that's how this team reminds me. They got off to the great start. I remember us talking back in April, and I'm like, yeah, but look who they played. Oakland, let's see when they – and they just keep plugging away. Thing that the Rays over the years have done a great job of, especially when they've had teams that are special. They at times would play you nuts. It would drive you nuts. And then they'd play the Yankees and the Red Sox, and they were right there banging heads and playing really good baseball. Just like Cleveland. They rise to the occasion. Sometimes there's a letdown when they're playing a lesser team. That can't happen. You don't like that. However, when the bell rings and it's a big-time matchup, they show up. And that is a really, really cool attribute for a team. And that's what they've been able to do so far. And, yeah, you got another couple of months to go, but think about how fast the first four have gone. I can't believe we're in August.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally cannot believe that we are in August. And I think that this – team, you know, that you're talking about, best record in baseball, and I guarantee you, I don't care what people from the outside are saying or thinking, inside that clubhouse, after having been together for the last 5.5-6 months, when you count spring training, these guys believe. There's a confidence level there. There's no question. And so that's half the battle. Okay, sometimes it's the whole battle. You got to believe. And there's no question at this point that this team believes in itself in a big way. So, you know, schedule be damned. They're going to go out and play and compete. And the attention to detail is why you're able to rise to the occasion. And certainly they've done a great job of doing that. Are they going to be tested? No question about it. But guess what? These other teams that are tough teams, they're playing the team with the best record of baseball, so it's really tough for them too.
BA joining us, Brian Anderson. BA, when a team does what our team has done, which probably fooling a lot of people. You know, nobody expected them to be where they are right now. As an opponent looking at a team like that, do you think, man, nothing but respect for the way these guys are playing, look what they've been able to do? Or are they looked at like, are you kidding? We see this roster, we can beat these guys. I wonder where that lays.
I think it's probably a little bit of both, you know, but the proof is in the record. You know, you can look at the team. I'm sure the 2008 Rays, the people looked at them and like, okay, this team, I mean, okay, nice. This is a really good start. Well, okay, fine, but they're getting it done. So you can think that. You have to respect it. You know, a team rolls in with one of the best or the best record in Major League Baseball, they're going to have your attention. There's no doubt about that. Now, you may think, hey, on paper, we can beat these guys, but you haven't so far. They have the best. They have the best record, the top record. So both things can be true. You know, it just comes down to execution. And this is where the rubber meets the road, August and September. Because that's why it's so nice for a team to have belief in itself, because they are going to be tested. The lights are going to get a little bit brighter. You know, it's not playoff baseball yet. It's getting close to being big matchups and big series week in and week out, and you're going to have to answer that bell. So far they have, and we'll see if they can continue down the stretch, because baseball, when you get into August and September and you're chasing a division title or a wild card spot, whatever it may be, the lights get, you know, like I said, they get a little bit brighter. The brand of baseball gets a little bit bigger. And I don't know if I'm sure I've told you this story before about Tony Lacava. When I was, he was like national cross checker for the Angels when I was getting drafted. And so I got to know him, all these guys flying in and out, you know, and getting to meet with them and talk to them if you're going to be a high draft pick. And I remember him telling me one time, you know, not everybody can play in October. I'm a 21-year-old junior in college, and I'm thinking to myself, what does that even mean, October? I mean, June, January, I mean, baseball. What do you mean not everybody can play in October? And I never asked him about it. I never said anything about it. I just soaked it in and wondered, what in the world was he talking about? 4 years later, I get called into the Mike Hargrove's office in Baltimore telling me that I've been added to the postseason roster for the ALCS. I don't know how I'm going to use you. You just be ready from pitch number one. Okay, fine. I go out to batting practice. I'm standing out in batting practice in Baltimore for the day game, game one of the series, and those words of Tony Lacava came rushing back over me like you cannot believe. And I thought, I get it now. I get it. October baseball, playoff baseball, the stage is bigger, the lights are brighter. Batting practice in the regular season is a necessary evil. It's what you do. Batting practice in the playoffs, in the postseason, is an event. You've got media everywhere. The fields are painted. The bunting's out. The fans are in the stands. There's a buzz. It's bigger. It's bigger, and you can feel it. You can absolutely, it's palpable. You can feel it. And some guys thrive in that environment, and some guys shrivel up in that environment. And so that's when I understood what he meant. And he's right. Not everybody can play in October.
That's awesome. BA, thanks, buddy.
Thank you, BA. Have a good weekend.
All right, boys. Take care.
Brian Anderson joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love talking to guys who played the game. There's perspective and things you get, like BA talking about pitching in October, you know, and not everybody can play in October. That was a fascinating story.
You know, if you think back to 95, Jeff, even just being around here between 95 and 97 when they made the World Series, like the electricity and buzz
was weird.
In 95 was something that none of us
had ever experienced.
Ever. And like, I can't remember who said it in the clubhouse, but they were talking about the number of media people that were on the field. Maybe it was Grover that said it. Was talking about the number of media people that were on the field prior to the game. It was almost hard to have batting practice.
Yeah.
Because there's these unwritten rules of batting practice where only certain people can touch the cage. Right? This is like so silly if you think about it.
Now you're not, yeah.
Now no one's, you know, so you got to stay on the warning track, and then there's all the networks were around. I don't know. And broadcasting
used to be you were leaning up against the cage and it didn't matter.
Yeah, well, early on. I mean, that went away, though. That's like sacred territory, man. Don't go in there. Don't lean on the cage.
It didn't used to be.
You will turn to sand if you walk inside. I remember once Eddie Murray called me up because I was talking to him about something, and he was at the batting cage, and he pointed over to me and told me to come over, and I'm like, no. Like, there was an electric force field between me and Eddie and the cage, and I'm like, no, I am not walking up to the cage. And then you look at other media people that maybe are there every day sometimes, and they go up and they lean on the cage, and you're like, oh. The chosen one.
Real quick batting cage story.
Yeah.
As long as you brought it up.
Yeah, so you're saying blame me for going off the rails?
It wasn't that big of a deal. So I was doing a story on walk-up music.
Yeah.
Okay? Huh? Every guy got to pick his own song and everything else. And the last time I had talked to Albert Bell was in spring training.
Oh, this could be good.
And Albert was great. You know, I'd said in spring training, hey, we're going to be here all week. We'd love to talk to you sometime. He goes, great, I'll catch you. And he did. And he walked over to us, and we did a really nice story with him and everything else. So I'm doing this. And, you know, I was in the wrong, probably. But protocol then was not like you talked about sacred ground, because you're allowed all over the place. Mm-hmm. So he came out of the cage, and he's standing there. He's not up against the cage or anything. And I said, hey, excuse me, Albert. And he didn't flinch or anything. And I said, Albert, nothing. I tapped him on the shoulder.
Ooh.
And he turned around and just ripped me a new one. And I said, hey, we're just doing this story on, and he's like, bah! And so he ripped me a new one. At the time, you were allowed to do that. You know what I mean?
It's a good thing you weren't a thermostat.
Well, at the time, you were allowed to talk to guys there. And
yeah.
There was no rule.
It was always, as soon as they come out of the cage, just grab them. That was the rule.
And so he ripped me a new one. And I turned around, and Paul Sorrento is standing there looking at me like, oh, dude, that's terrible. The look on his face was like you could tell he was feeling sorry for me. And he went, I'd be happy to talk to you about that. Thank you, Paul.
Wow, that was really nice of him to do that.
It was really nice of him.
Was it clean or no? What Albert was saying to you?
No, there were some words in there that you wouldn't put on the radio. And I knew Albert well enough and had known him for long enough. In fact, and he even said, and you should know better. Like, dude. Anyhow, so... You know, perhaps I was in the wrong, but at the time, protocol was you were allowed to do such things. Anywho, so there's the batting cage story. There's something. It's two games. Okay, let's not get carried away here. It's two games, but so far, Lane Thomas has stepped in and done exactly what it was Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff wanted him to do for this team. He's played two games, okay? He's had 8 at-bats. He's been on base with 3 base hits and 1 walk. So he's been on base 4 times. He has scored 3 runs. He's hit second right in front of Jose Ramirez. As he said, I'm getting fastballs.
Right.
He had a couple of doubles yesterday against Baltimore. So... he has stepped in and done exactly what they wanted. He played right field one game. He played center field yesterday. That's nice. He's not a man of a lot of words, at least so far, because post game yesterday he was asked, and you're going to have to listen closely because these don't last long. We're going to play 3 cuts on here being in Cleveland with the Guardians.
It's been awesome. Man, I just want to come in and do my job and kind of keep this thing rolling.
Okay, there's one.
Sure.
And then, remember, he was traded. His team, the Nationals, was in Arizona, and he ends up in Detroit in time to play in a day game.
Right. That's not fun.
Here's what he said about that.
I just felt like it was possible, and I was like, you know, wanted to get in the lineup and get to know the guys as soon as I could. I just felt like it was a good thing to do.
Well, it was, because he endeared himself to everybody, because that was pretty cool. It's like you just traded. I mean, it was less than, 24 hours. He's in the lineup.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. And then now he's, you know, getting used to new teammates and a new clubhouse and everything else. And here's the very short little blurb he had on that.
That's been awesome. I feel like you have the good personalities in any clubhouse you go to, so it's been fun.
There it is. That's Lane Thomas. I won't say man a few words because we don't know him well enough. Yesterday, postgame, he was a man of quick sound bites. So there's that. But so far, Andy, you know, 3 of 8 with a walk, 2 doubles, solid defense, and you can see how he just kind of finishes off that lineup, can't you?
Yes.
I mean, you've kind of been looking for a number two hitter all year. Well, you've got one now. And he was hitting second for the Nationals. It's Kwan, Thomas, Jose, Josh. I just like the way that this lineup looks now with him in it. And hopefully some guys at the bottom of the lineup can start to hit a little bit and get things going. But Thomas has done the job. Steven Vogt's the man who has to put him in the lineup, figure out how to use him. It would appear it's pretty easy how you're going to use this guy.
Pretty good first 2 games for him. Red eye and getting a big knock and then with a big game. And going out to center field, haven't done it much this year. Looked good out there, made a couple nice plays. So really love what Lane does for our lineup and really going to be a good, stable outfielder for us too.
Seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm always interested. There's an interesting twist to his career. I'll tell you in a second if you want.
All right. Okay. It's Baskin and Phelps right here on The Fan. That is David Fry, your Cleveland Guardians All-Star, talking about his new teammate, Lane Thomas. Fry had a big home run yesterday. Thomas had a couple of doubles. And we've talked about how Lane Thomas in 2 games just seems like an absolutely perfect fit, Andy. You know, he wasn't really on a whole lot of radars leading into the trade deadline. You know, there were other outfielders that you were hearing about more so for other teams. Didn't hear a ton about Thomas. And our organization goes out, picks him up, and pretty seamlessly in 2 games fits a bunch of spots. Okay, you're looking for somebody to play the outfield on a regular basis. Boom, done. Were you looking for maybe an upgrade in center field? Yeah, maybe. Well, okay, he played center yesterday, did a nice job. And batting in that 2-hole, perfect. In front of Jose Ramirez, great. You get on base. You know, he's scored runs since he's been here in only 2 games. It's working out really, really well. It's an impressive bit of work by the front office.
Yeah, I was kind of excited to see he played center field. That was one of the, you know, one of the big things that I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be good. We both sat around here and said, if he can play, I still wonder how they're going to use him down the road here. But is he going to play one of the corners? And then we heard people saying, well, I don't know if he can play center because he doesn't have the arm, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? I mean, I know it's only 2 games, too. Like, we've had a kind of weird week with trying to assess players who have gotten off to good. I mean, Travis Bezzana at single A in.
Didn't play yesterday,
man. In East Lake. Let's say you give him a day off, man. He had a busy season. Give the kid, I mean, you know.
I want to see him, man. Swing it.
I know. I think anyone that goes to Lake County wants to see him. It's like I want to be like, ooh, like I can't believe we had a conversation 2 days ago. The people were like, "Hey, when are they going to bring Bezzana up to the big league club?" I'm like, "He just got here.
Like you
better let him
two.
Season a little bit. Let's maybe he can be in Akron. Like you should be if he makes it to Akron next year. Woo!
It'd be nice if he's in Akron next year. In fact, I would expect him to be. But and then you go from there.
Mm-hmm.
The other acquisition of the trade deadline was Alex Cobb, and he was with Tampa Bay the entire time BA has worked with Tampa Bay. And so I wanted to make sure I asked Brian about him. And when we did, Brian said, oh, I was going to bring that up regardless of what we were talking about today. And he said he absolutely loves Alex Cobb. That's an endorsement. You know, that's a ringing endorsement. Menigan, who is a, you know, baseball freak, when Dan was here, he said, "I love Alex Cobb." Dan doesn't love anybody.
No, he doesn't.
So, I mean, he's not crazy about you. He doesn't like me. And
no,
so,
I actually think he likes me. Just sometimes
you think so?
I get on his nerves. Like, I don't know anybody else like that, but I get on his nerves a little.
He loves Alex Cobb. And the only thing I keep thinking about, Andy, is this. That's great. He was an all-star last year. Outstanding. That's wonderful. He hasn't pitched one pitch in the majors this year. So it's a little bit of a reach, I think, by the front office. His rehab stuff had looked good. You know, he had a hip injury, which led to a little shoulder issue. And then he came back from that and developed a little blister issue. He's expected to pitch on Saturday in Columbus. I would think if he's good to go Saturday in Columbus, Andy, he's not going to need more than maybe just that one appearance before he's up here and pitching. Other thing that works in his favor here, one-time teammate of Stephen Vogt, his new manager.
Just a wiry kid, threw hard, knew how to pitch. He was actually the first teammate I ever met in Pro Bowl. I'd gotten drafted as a college senior, and he was a second-year high school kid. We were going to Hudson Valley for short season and met him at the hotel, so he was the first person I ever met. But just a guy that knows how to pitch. Remember that. He flew through the minor leagues quickly for a high school pick and always knew what he wanted to do on the mound, and just somebody who's had a ton of success at the big league level.
That's Stephen Vogt on Alex Cobb. I hope... We all hope that this works. I hope that Matthew Boyd works. And, you know, Matthew Boyd pitched yesterday, actually, in Columbus, and did a pretty nice job. What did he do yesterday? Let me double check it.
Well, someone's going to have to do something, because I mean, I'm just looking through the rotation, and even ESPN has Cantillo not only starting tomorrow, but they have him starting against... the Twins a week from tonight, and you only have four starters in the rotation there.
Boyd went 63 pitches yesterday in Columbus. He went 3 2/3, so he pitched into the fourth, gave up one earned run, two runs on two hits, and he struck out five. So after two really nice appearances in Akron, he goes to Columbus, stretched out enough, probably not, 63 pitches, because you're going to want to bring him up here and have him go five. So... What's going to get you through five, maybe 75 pitches?
At least.
80? He might need another start or two in Columbus. But I would think Cobb walks in the door good to go, and you put him in the rotation. If his blisters are okay, can't pitch with blisters on your fingers. So hopefully he's here maybe next week, Andy. Maybe that Cantillo spot.
I mean,
maybe Joey goes and lights it up on Saturday.
For all of the dominance that the bullpen's had this year, there are just so many avenues of opportunity for anybody who's a starter who can jump off the page right now. The holes are there. I never, ever, ever in my wildest dreams would have thought that we'd be looking at a starting rotation of Carrasco, Cantillo, Williams, Lively, and still looking for another while you're sitting here in the beginning of August and have the best record in baseball. Like, that just doesn't...
There are a lot of things that don't compute.
The mathematics on that make no sense at all.
Does not compute. Does not compute. This doesn't compute. Starting pitching has been the lifeblood of this whole thing for years.
Good point, Will Robinson. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. And here it's not working very well, but yet they're getting it done. And so imagine if Cobb can come up here and pitch like he has throughout most of his career. If Matthew Boyd can have another rehab start or three and come up here and pitch as he has at times in his career. Okay, he wasn't any great shakes in Detroit, but had some really good moments. Had a big strikeout year one year with the Tigers. Tigers were a lousy team when he was there. And if they can add two guys who become the best two guys out of that group of fellas we've talked about who could be there, McKenzie, Allen, Carlos Carrasco, Cantillo, if those two guys can step in and be the guys, oh man, all of a sudden you might be good to go.
Man, I just, when it comes to Cobb, I'm just hoping if they can get him out there for five innings and he gets stronger as the season goes on, okay.
Yeah, because he hasn't pitched all year.
Yeah,
you know, he's going to need.
That's got to be the goal, right? If you're a fan, you better think, okay, get Cobb out there. I'm just trying to look at even the last games that he had pitched.
Heck, Andy,
how many pitches he's thrown?
You might even just get four innings out of these two guys. And I'm counting on. I'm guessing the organization is counting on Cobb more than Boyd.
Yeah.
Only because Boyd's coming back from Tommy John, Cobb's coming back from hip surgery, which led to a shoulder issue, which led to blisters, or at least, you know, there's the timeline of the injuries. But I would think that the general thought is, okay, hopefully Boyd can help us, but we're counting on Cobb to step into this rotation.
Well, and mix in the fact that, you know, look at the ERAs of the guys that you've had at the back end of that rotation. You know,
it's
Carrasco,
all over five.
Yeah, Carrasco's at a mid 5.5 right now.
5.68, and he's 3-9.
Exactly. And so if you're Alex Cobb and you step in, you know, you get a 4.5 ERA,
thrilled. You've helped us. The job of the starting pitcher, if you want to simplify a starting pitcher's job, is give your team a chance to win the game.
Basically, less than three runs, five innings, five, six. I hate to say five innings now, but that's what it is.
Well, give your team a chance to win the game. And it's even this, Andy. You know, okay, I gave up, let's just say a starting pitcher goes out and gives up four runs in the first. All right, well, you've only thrown 20 pitches. You're back out there. If you can leave them at four runs and give your team a chance to come back and you make it through six and you've given up four runs and your team has come back and tied the game, all right, well, in theory, you gave your team a chance to win the game.
I mean, part of it is the way you're giving up the four runs, too. If you're throwing batting practice in the first inning and now you're up to, you know, it's funny how you watch a guy start and he'll be like, I'll get shelled for five in the first. But if they pitched five innings and gave up one run an inning, you'd be like, yeah, okay. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, but if you settle down, you know, you just got to keep your team in the game. You know, if you go out and you shut them down like crazy, as we've seen here for many, many years, great. That's all the better. But with this team right now, get to the bullpen, and you're trying to get deeper into the bullpen, which is why you're hoping for six innings. And if you get seven, oh, thank you very much. That's phenomenal. You don't see that very often anymore.
Do we know what kind of hip? For our team. Was it hip surgery or just hip? He just had hip issues.
He had a hip surgery. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
I believe his hip is still there. It's not titanium.
So it wasn't replacement, is what you're trying to say. Yeah, okay. I always hear all these people that have hip issues that, and maybe it's just based on, and again, I'm not talking about athletes, so that's probably the inherent problem, but people who have hip replacements or do that always seem to be, like, after you see them after the surgery, after a couple of weeks or a couple of months, are always like, oh, I feel so much better. I feel great.
Excuse me. You mean like me not limping down the hallway here?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
I didn't want to out you.
Go ahead, way to bring it up, Andy.
I didn't know if there were any HIPAA laws against me for bringing up that my partner on the other side.
Get it?
Yeah.
HIPAA law about my HIPAA?
Yes.
Thanks. That's funny, Andy.
You're welcome. But, I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, but it's not the same, so I don't really want to go down this road. But you felt significantly better after you did that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like.
I no longer walk like Festus from Gunsmoke, for an old reference.
Hang on. You know I got to do it, right?
Go ahead, Andy. How long was Gunsmoke on the air? It's been off since 1974, Jeff. Great.
Actually, if you want to feel a little better, it's been off since 1975.
Okay, so good.
But it did debut in 1955.
Okay.
Were there any? Yeah, well, there had to be a couple episodes that were not in black and white. Yeah. Wow, look at that. Oh, I think the picture I'm looking at it has it was in black and white, and then somebody went in and colored in the.
It's called colorized.
Yeah, it was colorized. Yeah, I don't know.
Didn't take crayons, Andy.
It looks like crayons. I'm not going to lie. So that looks realistic.
Oh, golly. Okay, there you go.
Gunsmoke.
We'll see what happens against the Orioles the rest of this weekend. I'm optimistic. It's weird because we were both really looking forward to the start of this season, even though we didn't have any great expectations of this team. And I think we're typical of most every Guardians fan this season. Hey, great, season's starting up. You and I were more pumped about it than that for some reason. I don't know why. And man, have we all been rewarded by what's just been an incredibly fun season. And you mentioned the other day, will I be disappointed if they don't make the playoffs? Yeah, I'll be disappointed because they're in position to do it now. But I won't be mad. This thing's been an absolute blast. Nick Shook works for NFL.com. Nick Shook used to be a Clevelander, still is. But you know, now he writes for NFL.com. We're going to talk to Nick next, right here on Baskin and Phelps.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.